The following is an audio podcast from the Korea Society, celebrating over 50 years of promoting greater awareness, understanding, and cooperation between the people of the United States and Korea. For more information on our programs, please visit our website at www.koreasociety.org. This podcast is brought to you through the generous financial support of the Tongyang Group. In the areas of financial services and manufacturing, the companies of the Tongyang Group harness the passion and creativity of 12,000 employees worldwide to better serve their clients. The Tongyang Group, a global partner for Korean business.
On Sunday, March 1st, 2009, Evans J.R. Revere, president of the Korea Society, hosted a panel discussion entitled The Obama Administration and Korea, What's in the Cards? On an episode of Asian America TV on New York's NYC TV 25. Joining Revere was Jeffrey Schaefer, vice chairman of Global Banking for Citi, and Professor Donald Zagoria of the National Committee on American Foreign Policy. The panel discussed the challenges facing the Obama administration with regards to the United States' relationship with South and North Korea.
Hello, and welcome to Asian America, the leading public television program focusing on issues concerning Asia and Asian Americans. I'm Evans Revere, president of the Korea Society, and I'm pleased to serve as your host for today's program. Our program today looks at the new Obama administration in the United States and its relationship with the Republic of Korea and with North Korea as well. Today we're going to talk about some of the challenges facing President Obama and his administration as he and his administration begin to shape their policies towards the Korean Peninsula. And we will talk about some of the opportunities presented by those challenges. Some of these challenges are specific to the Korean Peninsula. Others are regional in nature. And of course, the U.S.-Korea relationship is also being shaped in important ways by global forces as well. I'm really pleased to be joined today by two very distinguished experts who will help put all of these things and more in some perspective for us. Seated directly across from me is Mr. Jeffrey R. Schaefer. Mr. Schaefer is the Vice Chairman of Citi's Global Banking and Senior Asia-Pacific Officer in New York, where he is responsible for key Asia-Pacific government and corporate client relationships. Mr. Schaefer was previously the head of economics and political strategies and was also Assistant Secretary and subsequently Undersecretary of Treasury for International Affairs. I can't think of anyone better qualified to talk about the global and regional financial environment facing the U.S.-Korea relationship today than Mr. Schaefer. Welcome. To Mr. Schaefer's right is Professor Donald Zagoria, who is a trustee and director of Northeast Asia Projects at the National Committee on American Foreign Policy here in New York. Dr. Zagoria is a widely renowned expert on international politics with an emphasis on relations between the great powers, especially U.S.-China relations, and he has been particularly active on U.S.-North Korea relations and North Korea-related issues over the years. Dr. Zagoria is one of America's most distinguished authorities on these and many other subjects, and it's a privilege to have him with us today as well. Welcome.
Thank you.
Don, if I can begin with you, let me call on your regional expertise in Northeast Asia to ask you to give us, a snapshot of the region. What's the current political and strategic context in which the U.S.-Korea relationship is operating and evolving today? And for added measure, if you could give us a brief word or two about how each of the major players in the region, and I would include the United States as one of those critical players, sees the region and its challenges today.
Well, I would start, Evans, with the global economic meltdown that is influencing the whole world today and result in growing protectionism and financial nationalism and all those bad things that affected us in the 1930s, or can we avoid that through international cooperation, which of course we all hope we can. Beyond that, there is, I think, the whole phenomenon of the rise of China that influences the whole region, that Americans, Koreans, Japanese, everyone in the region is concerned about. There are many issues that we could be concerned about, military, economic, political. I personally am optimistic about the potential for integrating China into the global community. As far as America, the Obama administration is concerned, I think what many experts, including me, are concerned about is the danger of the Obama administration overlooking Asia because of the more pressing issues in Iran. Well, first the economic crisis, then Iran, Afghanistan, Iraq. So there's a danger of the urgent crowding out the important. And we're talking about a region, Asia, which has half the population of the world and half the GDP of the world. So its strategic importance is enormous. I am encouraged that just recently Secretary of State Clinton went to Asia as her first order of business. She didn't go to Europe or anywhere else, as most American Secretaries of State have gone in the past. So I think that's a very encouraging note. The United States is, of course, concerned with many issues in Asia. The rise of China is one. The North Korean nuclear issue is right up there on the top of the list. Are we going to be able to get North Korea to denuclearize? I think this is possible that the Obama team will come up with one single coherent message, and that would be a cause for optimism. I think when China looks at the Korean Peninsula, its first, second, and third fear is an unstable North Korea, a North Korea that collapses with refugees moving into China. And the Chinese are much more concerned about that even than they are about a nuclear North Korea with a few bombs. And so their priorities are somewhat different from ours, although they also would like to see a denuclearized North Korea. But they are very concerned about putting so much pressure on North Korea that would contribute to their collapse. The second thing I think is, must be on the minds of every Chinese leader when they wake up and look at Korea is the danger someday of a unified Korea that is pro-Western and anti-China. And for historical reasons and strategic reasons, that would be of enormous concern to them. And so they've got to be worried about that. And I think the Chinese also are very much concerned about the possibilities of a Japan that goes nuclear. And that's one reason why they would like to see the North Korean nuclear issue resolve so that it doesn't give Japan added impetus to move in that direction. Finally, and I'll just stop here, I think there's a great strategic challenge facing all of us in Northeast Asia, and that is how to develop a multilateral security system comparable to what we have developed in Europe.
Thank you very much for that, Don. I had anticipated that you would give us the big picture and then focus on the Korean Peninsula, and that's exactly what you've done. And thank you for your very insightful comments as well on the respective positions of all the players. You also anticipated my next question, which was going to be, what are the two or three special difficulties or problems facing the Obama administration as it looks specifically at the Korean Peninsula? And you've done that very, very artfully, and thank you for that. Jeff, let me turn to you. Because before we get back into a number of the other issues that that Don raised earlier, like North Korea, the six-party talks, and USROK political and military relations, it seems to me that it's going to be helpful for us to first focus on the thing that will probably be on President Obama's mind every morning for the coming months, and that is the global and regional financial and economic environment. It seems to me that the number one priority facing President Obama is obviously the economy and how to get our economy and the world's economy back on track. Please share with us your assessment of the scope and the urgency, if you will, of that challenge and how it's likely to affect the context of America's relationship with Korea and some of the other key players in the region.
Evans, in the early weeks now of the Obama administration, I think we are facing the most challenging economic and financial times in my professional lifetime, and maybe going back quite a bit before then. And I think it's a situation that has relatively recently come home to Asia and Korea, very much wrapped up in this. For those of us in the New York financial community, the problems really became quite severe over a year and a half ago. And for about a year, we struggled, and there were great difficulties within our firms. The U.S. economy struggled, but it continued to grow on average. And then last fall, suddenly we reached a new stage. The financial distress deepened with the collapse of AIG and other firms. And about that time, too, you had a seizing up of spending on the part of both consumers and businesses on investment in the U.S. We've seen a lot of it in Europe, too, which was also financially affected. And this really had a major impact on the Asian economies, on Korea, but also on China and the other countries in that region, who rely very heavily on the U.S. and European markets for exports, and were also affected, and Korea was especially affected, by the collapse of the interbank funding process that allowed a bank that had loans outstanding in dollars to fund itself by borrowing dollars. That dried up for banks of any nationality, but Korean banks who were important in providing financing to their firms involved in international trade were especially hit by this. So the impact on Korea and other Asian economies has been very severe. The economy began to decline in the fourth quarter of last year. We're now looking, and I think most people are looking, for negative growth in 2009. The average among a number of investment banks is for negative growth of about 2.3%. That would only be a third as deep a decline as we saw in the Asian financial crisis in 1998. So it's very serious, but it's still not on the same scale as that event. And Korea is importantly wrapped up in what happens now in the United States to stabilize the economy here. The president has a stimulus package to outline a financial rescue package. And if these are successful, one can expect to see the stabilization of the U.S. financial system in the first half of the year and a bottom of the economic growth in mid-year or soon thereafter. And that would help to underpin growth in the rest of the world. Other countries are also taking very strong action, and the international cooperation has been very good. The U.S. Fiscal stimulus is about 5% of GDP if it gets passed in something like its current form. Korea has enacted fiscal stimulus of about 3.7% of GDP, about three-quarters as much already. And China has acted early and on a scale even beyond those two. So you're seeing this from many quarters. You've seen the Bank of Korea engage with the Federal Reserve Bank of New York to arrange for the swap facilities that have equipped Korea with additional resources on top of its very large resource, its very large reserves, in order to meet the liquidity strains that its banks are facing in this international meltdown of the interbank markets that I talked about before. So action is being taken, and I think there's a very good prospect that we will begin to find a bottom. But we are very much all in this together, and I hope we can all get out of it together.
Thank you. Let me follow up a very critical priority for the U.S.-ROK relationship, and that is the U.S.-ROK Free Trade Agreement. Many and both countries have recognized this agreement as a win-win agreement. But at the same time, President Obama, during the campaign, made some comments that were critical about the Free Trade Agreement. What, in your view, keeping in mind the overall economic climate that we're in right now, what are the prospects for the FTA for getting it ratified in the United States Congress in the midst of the atmosphere that we're dealing with right now?
Well, first, Evans, I think I want to echo what you said, that it is a very important agreement, both for the U.S. and for Korea and for this very critical relationship between our two countries. We at Citi have strongly supported the passage of the U.S.-Korea Free Trade Agreement. It unfortunately did get bogged down in the political process last year and wasn't seen through
to completion. But I am encouraged by the signals coming out of the new administration that they recognize the strategic importance of these free trade agreements. They will continue to try to move them forward. And I'm hopeful that the economic climate will become more supportive of being able to do this, and we can move forward with this agreement in due course. It's not going to happen tomorrow, but I'm still optimistic that a free trade agreement between the U.S. and Korea is in our future. And I understand that the negotiations are proceeding on a Korea-EU free trade agreement, and there's no way of concentrating the minds of American politicians like seeing competition from Europe. So perhaps that will help people to understand how important this is.
I couldn't have put that any better myself. Thank you. Don, let me come back to one of the topics that you touched on earlier, and that is, of course, dealing with North Korea. If you were giving advice to President Obama, what would you suggest that he needs to do on a priority basis to solve a problem?
It's clearly going to be very difficult. They are already saying that they are a nuclear power and we should recognize them as such. On the other hand, no American government is going to recognize North Korea as a nuclear power because of its regional implications. That we need to be prepared to extend diplomatic recognition. We need to give them security assurances, and we need to give them some kind of economic assistance that would be supported by our allies, the ROK and Japan. Now, in exchange for that, they have to be prepared to give up completely their nuclear weapons and to permit verifiable inspection. Now, those are the ultimate goals. I think it's doable, but it will require patience, which is not something that Americans are noted for having. And it will require a very great diplomatic skill.
We've seen in recent weeks an escalation of the rhetoric coming out of Pyongyang. Some of it's been getting increasingly harsh. We've also seen Seoul's expression of its own position, which seems to be very clear and very firm. How much of that rhetoric, in your view, is aimed at Seoul?
First, I would say that nothing the North Koreans do should ever surprise anybody, because they frequently act in ways that are counterproductive to their own interests. And for them at this point, at the very beginning of an Obama administration, to make military threats against South Korea, to make the kinds of, suggest that maybe they're going to have a missile test, and other such things, I think is really moving in the wrong direction. I wish their rhetoric would calm down, and that we could have some time to resume the negotiating process. But I'd be curious about your view in response to the same question.
Sure. I think there are at least three things going on here. Part of it is indeed an effort to get the South to moderate or change its position in North-South relations. Another key element of it, I think, is signaling towards the United States, basically a warning, if you will, that Pyongyang is not to be ignored in this process. But I also think there's a third element at work here, and that is the internal element in the North. Although it's very clear that Chairman Kim is back in charge, if you will, in Pyongyang, but at the same time, they're starting to look towards the future in interesting ways, and I think various elements of North Korea's bureaucracy and its military and its party and other key elements of the establishment are probably positioning themselves for the future. Do you see any prospect that Washington and Seoul might somehow be at odds in both the scope and the pace of dealing with North Korea?
Now, so we've been out of sync with the South Koreans. Hopefully, we now have a conservative South Korean president who basically, so far as I can see, is saying most of the right things, namely that, yes, we're prepared to provide economic assistance to North Korea, but you have to assure us that you're going to denuclearize. So we have a conservative South Korea and a new Obama administration with a lot of very experienced people who I think will start on a negotiating track with North Korea. So I would, again, I don't want to sound Pollyannish. I don't want to be too optimistic about everything, but I am optimistic that Washington and Seoul will, and Beijing and hopefully Tokyo, will come together in a some sort of strategic framework towards North Korea, that it and that will increase the pressure on North Korea to move towards denuclearization, because it's one thing if the Americans alone are behind these overtures, but if the whole region is in support of them, it'll be much more difficult for North Korea to ignore.
On this issue of North Korea, and then going back to the points that you made, Jeff, earlier about the economy, do you have any sense that the North may be trying to exploit the current crisis that the world economy is in, and that the difficulties that Seoul's economy and Washington's economy is in, exploit that for their own purposes?
There may be an element of that. I don't understand how they think the way the other two of you do as well, except that I've always been told to never underestimate them, that there is a reason for everything they do. But you do see around the world, in a number of countries where U.S. relations have not been so good, countries seeking to use what is seen as a weakness, the economic weakness and the problems that we're having at home, as a way of becoming more assertive. And I wouldn't be surprised that there's a part of that in North Korea as well. But the other side of it is that in a world where there are fewer resources available, some of the countries that North Korea has looked to in the past for support may be chancier in the future. Sure. And so they have to factor in as well the fact that there are harder times for everybody ahead.
Thank you for that. Jeff, let me turn to you and ask you to, if you could gaze into your crystal ball, let's say a year from now, looking at where we are right now in this global financial crisis, keeping in mind some of the things that you said a few moments ago about where things may be headed. What's your best case scenario for where we might be a year from now, and how does that, and how would that affect the overall environment between the United States and its various partners and allies in Northeast Asia, particularly Korea?
Well, I think the best case is one in which we have stabilized the financial system, banks are lending again, people are buying bonds, and the U.S. economy is beginning to grow, probably even by the end of the year, not quite to the trend growth rate, so you could still see unemployment edging up. Mm-hmm. But that would have begun to give heart to the rest of the world. Output would stabilize and begin to grow. But at the same time, that there would have been a shift in focus on the fundamental drivers of growth in the different parts of the world. The U.S. had been the consumer of last resort for the world for more than a decade. We built up very large imbalances, large external borrowings, and countries of Asia as a whole, the products often got put on the boats and came to the U.S. and to Europe from China, but they included value added from Korea, Japan, Singapore, the whole region. Asia had relied very heavily on driving its growth on exports outside the region. And that imbalance can't persist. My sense is that the authorities in Beijing are thinking, we don't want to subject ourselves to this risk again. We'd better develop a growth strategy that is more focused on domestic demand. I think they'll do that. And you can see the fiscal stimulus they're undertaking is the first step in that. I think the same thing, I'm told, is beginning to be said in the Ministry of Finance in Japan. And they've been kind of living in denial about this for much longer than most. I think and hope, too, that in Korea the focus is, yes, we're going to be traders, we're going to be exporters, we're going to play an important role in world markets for automobiles and steel and ships and consumer electronics and an expanding range of goods that Korea is strong at. But we're going to be demanders as well as suppliers, and a part of an Asia with growing intra-Asia linkages that generates more domestic demand that supports the next 20 years of growth.
Well, that optimistic note will have to be the penultimate note. We've unfortunately run out of time for today's program, even though we've only managed to scratch the surface, quite frankly, in talking about some of the issues that the new American president and his Korean partner, President Lee, will face in the coming months and years. I think it's pretty clear that the ongoing financial crisis is going to be claiming a lot of the attention of both those leaders and other leaders in the region for some time to come. And of course, lurking just behind this financial crisis, without a doubt, are some other important concerns that we've talked about today: North Korea, the free trade agreement, the six-party talks, and where those may be headed. And all of these things, I think, are going to be hot topics for quite some time to come. And I want to thank both of you for providing us, our viewers, with your insights and thoughts on all of these issues and more today, a lot more today. And I hope our viewers have found the program and our discussion an informative one. On behalf of my fellow panelists and Asian America, I'm Evans Revere of the Korea Society, and I want to thank you for watching, and we'll see you again next week. Thanks.
The opinions expressed in the preceding program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Korea Society, its staff, or management. Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Korea Society. If you enjoyed it, please consider becoming a member. Visit www.koreasociety.org for more information about memberships and to learn more about the programs available at the Korea Society.